gentlemen. Welcome to the Sunday edition of Warrior Connection. This is Doug Rocky, and again, we're going to have some nice conversation tonight. As we start, one of the things we need to remember, and part of the reason we do the respect, is all the people in the military need the respect of everybody. Everybody that serves our nation needs respect of everybody in our nation. Everybody that serves in the military, veterans and everything that become wounded, injured, or ill, need the respect, and they also need the medical care. Very, very, very important. So we need to remember that as we think about them, as we discuss the topics of the evening. Denise, are you here by any chance tonight? Danny Williams, are you there? Okay. Our guest tonight is supposed to be Danny Williams. Hopefully he'll be calling in a moment, or Denise will also. So why don't we talk about some things? One of the things we're going to talk about tonight, and we brought out, one of the reasons I had Danny Williams coming on, is to discuss all the different things associated with the media and the information that we have available to us. And what do we need to do from there? How do we get to the information to us? How do we ensure the information that we're getting is accurate and effective? And how do we ensure that it's used to help us? One of the things that we ran into problems after problem is the information that was known at the command headquarters, whether it's Desert Storm, Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, or going all the way back to Vietnam, or going into Panama, or any of the other events, is unfortunately, those in the military didn't always have the information that they needed. It would be great if they did, but they didn't. And the other thing that we found happening is those in the command units, not all the commanders had the information that they should have. Too often, the information was not provided to the unit commanders, or the information that was provided to the unit commanders was inaccurate or ineffective. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the things we have to look about is going back and looking at the reasons for all the wars that we've been involved in. I mean, I started out in the Vietnam War. That's over 40 years ago. We know today that the information that was provided to Congress and everything that led up to the escalation of the Vietnam War in 1964 and 65 was the fact that they had a massive incident where supposedly North Vietnamese gunboats attacked one of our ships. We know today the Gulf of Tonkin incident never did occur. So sad, because it turned into an incredible escalation, and well over 50,000 were killed in action in Vietnam, and leaving millions of people casualties from Agent Orange and all the other things that happened to us. Incredible number wounded in that time period, too. And again, medical care at that time, in comparison today, has changed dramatically. And we're seeing that changes all the time. So the information wasn't there. There was a lot of stuff, misinformation throughout the Vietnam War and everything else, especially on Agent Orange, where individuals were told there were no health effects from Agent Orange and they didn't worry about it. And we know today that they've always known there were serious health problems associated with Agent Orange. We know from the Admiral Elmwall Zumwalt report from 1990 that Agent Orange caused serious health problems, and the VA and Department of Defense had deliberately and willfully ignored all the warnings, ignored all their internal information to prevent that information from, again, preventing liability and accountability for anybody. Denny, are you here by chance yet? Okay, I guess we got a little lost connection there. Okay. Anyhow, we'll continue on. So we've got all this stuff. We come up to Desert Storm. And again, all the issues with Desert Storm that we had. One of the things that, again, we know that happened with Desert Storm is the information wasn't provided. Again, we're looking at the information on how it all got started and what happened. Again, what had happened there is Iraq was kind of like challenged by Kuwait over the oil supplies. And Kuwait was given a green light to tap their oil supplies and everything else. And then when Iraq started making noises and asking what they could do, what had happened there, again, once more, they were told, Iraq was told that nobody would intervene, and then they invaded Kuwait and the whole thing got set up. We know from the information, I get the misinformation from Desert Storm that continued on and everything else that happened there, that the U.S. had provided the chemical and biological weapons to the Iraqi military prior to Desert Storm, and they were used on the Iranians, the Iraqi Kurds, and then we made the decision in December of 1990 to destroy everything in place. We had to blow it all up. So incredible amounts of chemical and biological weapons were deliberately destroyed. And if anybody has any questions about the information, all you go to is General Schwarzkopf's own autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero, and then read page 390. It's right there. It's thoroughly, completely there. And you can see the decision was made to blow everything up. And again, that leads from that decision in December of the first, I don't know, it was December 10th, 11th, 12th, 15th, something like that, of 1990. That decision to destroy all our Bryce chemical biological stockpiles the U.S. gave them in place, again, goes into the thing for OIF and OEF when they said that the Iraq had chemical biological stockpiles. Everybody knew that they didn't. Because when we made the decision, not only all of us at the command staff, Bowers Raider was involved, General Schwarzkopf was involved, General Horner was involved, General Pagonis was involved, everybody else, obviously Dick Cheney, General Powell, again the medical commander Zula, so everybody was thoroughly aware. What happened after that, again, is the misinformation. The misinformation campaign that should have got out into the media, should have got out to the Congress, and the military personnel, never happened. It continued on, and they made the decision right off the bat that they were going to prevent the information from getting out to avoid all the liability from the known health effects of the chemical and biological weapons because they were U.S. stuff provided. England, Great Britain, Germany, the U.S., we'd provided. Obviously, Soviets also provided stuff. So we got into a serious, serious problem with that. And it didn't have any help to have that stuff. So the information never got down. Now, we all know with the chemical and biological weapons, Jimmy Toot did the incredible service with Senator Riegel when they did the report on the transfer and the sale and shipping of all the chemical and biological weapons over to Iraq prior, before Desert Storm that we then destroyed and got used on us. And again, as we destroyed them, it came back on us. So Jimmy Toot did a great job there. Unfortunately, what had happened, the misinformation in the media and the press was out there totally. The soldiers were told there wasn't any. The media was told there wasn't any. And what had happened is it happened too often. They just went ahead and went along with all this stuff and didn't dig into it, find out what had happened. And there were only a handful of reporters in our nation that were doing anything with this. There's only a handful of reporters in our nation that are still doing anything with us. And again, to get the information and put the stuff out. So again, we're looking at all the misinformation and what has happened, and we have to ask our question, why does that occur? What is behind it? When we looked at all the stuff from Vietnam to Desert Storm, the reasons for the war, the consequences of the war, the casualties of the war, the delayed, denied medical care for the war, you don't see that information in the general media. You don't see that information on TV. You don't read that information in your average newspaper. Denny, have you joined us by any chance? Okay. All right. Well, hopefully he'll come on. I'm not sure what happened there. So, again, we're looking at all this misinformation that has happened. And how does that come about and how does it transpire? Well, when we're looking at the media, having worked with the newspapers and different reporters and given numerous interviews now for many, many years under many, many venues, and again, putting together a documentary or working with Congress, House of Representatives, the Senate, the VA, working with the Department of Defense, various agencies, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, working for the Center for Disease Control or National Academy of Sciences, they don't have the information. They don't have the primary information. They didn't have the primary reports. And again, the reporters don't necessarily go digging for it. Unfortunately, the reporters have to report to somebody that's going to make them money. That's how it's all about, money. There's no money necessarily in revealing the fact that there's a million casualties now from the nonsense in the Gulf. There's no money in revealing that the majority of the casualties are the result of friendly fire. There's no money in revealing that medical care has been delayed, denied, and ineffective as provided by both the Department of Defense medical authorities and the Department of Veteran Affairs. In fact, it's just the opposite. If that information doesn't come about, there is no accountability. If there is no accountability, there is no responsibility. If there's no responsibility, we see what is happening and we don't get the proper care. We don't have the information to clean up the environmental catastrophes that's all over the place. And so we're just put into a, I can't even begin, it's a catch-22. So when we think about this and it's all that's happening, we have to ask our question, what's the purpose of the newspaper? What's the purpose of a reporter? I can only hope and God can only pray, we can pray to God, that the reporters and all the journalists take their responsibilities seriously, that they dig out the information, that they go to the primary sources. And ladies and gentlemen, that doesn't mean going on the internet. You have to find the primary report. You have to find the individual that was responsible or that was accountable. You have to find the individual that made the decision. So whether or not you're the military personnel trying to find out what happened or the journalist trying to gather the information to provide that knowledge to the veteran, the family members, the members of Congress, the medical personnel, or whatever, you have to dig for it and you have to go out. You have to remember the military and the VA have no desire or intent to provide that information to you. You don't need to go to classified information to have this. The majority of the information that we always need and what needs to be presented to the public, what we need to get our medical care, has not been and never will be classified. We don't need to discuss classified information. But we do need to get the information out about what has happened, how it's occurred, what has transpired, and what is the next thing on the agenda. When we look at all this stuff, we can only hope that the reporter even knows who to ask. But then the other thing that happens with the reporter and the congressman, they not only don't know what question to ask, but I have found out they don't even understand the question they need to ask. Because the information and the knowledge that they have about that specific area is limited. If you don't have the education, the science, the math, the engineering, the microbiology, the physics, the chemistry, the anatomy, the physiology, the mechanical engineering, the aeronautical engineering, you won't have the ability to ask the question. And even if you did ask the question, you're not necessarily going to understand the answer. Scientists and everybody can relate the information, doctors can relate the information, but we can only reduce it down to a certain level, educational level, or comprehension level. In the military, most manuals are written at the fourth and fifth grade level because that's the reading level of most military personnel for the enlisted. The officers obviously have a lot higher reading level, but even in too many cases, what I found, their reading and science background is deficient. So we're running into a problem of understanding. How do we get the information to the public? How do we get the information to the individual? Does a reporter know what question to ask? Does a reporter understand the information that he might get in the answer as he asks the question? For example, we had so many problems. Obviously, the U.S. provided nerve agents to Iraq prior to Desert Storm. Well, nerve agents are the chemical warfare agents that are deliberately built and used and put into weapon systems for delivery. But nerve agents are also pesticides. And we had an incredible problem with pesticides during Desert Storm. We required the use of pesticides to maintain exactly what it's for, take, get rid of the pests and the other problems, around the tents, the food establishments, and everything else. Because if we had those endemic diseases being generated by the insects and everything else, the casualty numbers would be way up. So the conscious choice, again, you have to use pesticides, but the problem we run into, pesticides in and of themselves cause medical problems. So the misuse of pesticide in Desert Storm, just for normal preventive medicine areas, also ran into a problem. Again, how much of that information got out? Did the reporter gather the information? Did he understand the information when he was getting it? And how did he present that to the public in a format that they could understand it? Even the most well-intentioned, again, hopefully my guest, if he does show up, was going to be the best thing there, because he's probably the king of the hill in this. Being able to explain clearly and concisely in the amount of time or the amount of space authorized within a newspaper or some magazine or some other publication. We have to remember the amount of reading a person does or how many words you can get. If you can get a 1,000-word story or a 15-word story, 1,500-word story, that's a lot in the newspaper. Unfortunately, some of the stories require several thousand words to explain. We have to have the information. We have to be able to explain it so that you'll understand it. So again, what do we have and what does it mean? And can the reporter gather the information and translate it into a sense that everybody would understand it? Again, very, 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 very important. Hello?
Yes, hello, Doug. This is Denise calling in.
Oh, I'm glad you called in.
Well, it was a busy week, and I'm still recovering, but I figured you might need some help there.
Yeah, we're waiting. Denny was supposed to come on. I'm waiting for Denny to come on, but I'm not sure what has happened there.
Okay, well, would you like kind of a report from the Research Advisory Committee meeting that I went to?
You want to? Yeah, definitely need to. Can you send a quick email to Denny?
I
can
try.
Give him a call, on the other line?
I can try.
Okay. Okay, yeah, you want to give the report to first?
Sure, I'll do that first, and I'll try to remind him. First of all, the Research Advisory Committee on Gut for Illness Research was created by law, and this was an effort that was led on the Hill through Gulf War veterans involvement. Jim Tewitt was around helping drafting, getting this legislation through. It was signed into law in 2000. This committee has really been the supporters of Gulf War veterans. It's made up, there's usually four Gulf War veterans sitting on the committee. Right now we have two that have been coming, Anthony Hardy and Marguerite Knox. And Marguerite Knox served on the Presidential Advisory Committee for years, and then she served on this one. And we got that passed in law in 2000. Their first meeting was in 2002. The holdup was we had two bills go into law that year. So they sent them both over to Justice and said, oh, which one do we enforce? And basically, I don't think they were wanting to do the Gulf War Research Advisory Committee. And it came back, finally, that you enforce them both. There was no conflict. So the first meeting was 2002. 2004, they had the first report they came out with, which was, this is not stress. And that's when it was presented to the VA secretary, and Ross Perot was there. A lot of media at that time. Then we came up to 2008, and they published another huge, huge study, about 600 pages worth, detailing what they knew at the time of 2008 as far as exposures, what research was current, what was showing. They have continued their work. They meet about three times a year. They were meeting in Texas when we had the UT Southwestern Collaborative Center until the VA killed that off. And so now they meet twice a year in D.C., and then they meet once in Boston. They moved their, they had some office in Kansas. And when Leah Steele felt like she'd done as much as she could as one of the co-chairs and wanted to just concentrate on research to help us, then it was moved up to Boston. So we do meet in Boston because the Boston Medical School, and there's been a lot of involvement on the pesticide issue and the studies they did on those veterans. So we've been struggling along. And the last year or so has been focused on trying to get a strategic plan for research agreed to by all, which means the VA and everybody. It's very contentious. The VA has not wanted to work with us. We got two new people involved from the VA ORD, Operation Research and Development, and they came the last meeting in January, and we thought we had hope. And the committee worked diligently, making changes, submitting changes, trying to work together. Well, they did not update, did not accept any of the changes. So the VA Research Advisory Committee voted at this meeting not to accept the strategic research plan as it stands. We're hoping that there will be a coming together still, but they drew the line and said no. You know, you haven't worked in good faith with us, and this is it. Now, the other thing was that they talked about the research budget and how it's been cut at the VA. Both of these things I've written up, and you can go and read those two reports. I got their handouts, and I just, you know, typed them in myself to get it out to everybody on veteransnewsnow.com. And if you go down and find my name, you'll find those two articles, and it's basically a report of how things really went bad at the VA RAC committee and what the real status is on that. Now, on Monday morning, there was very good research presented by Dr. Haley, Dr. Dane Cook. Can't think of the name of the researcher. I can't say it. It's a kind of a Greek name, I think, out of Minneapolis, VA. Really showing the damage neurologically for Gulf War veterans. So the neurological damage is continuing to be documented. With whatever little research we've been able to get, that is being documented. And that's a key item for us. And the VA needs to be listening and responding. But what I'm seeing, and I've put it out on questionnaires to people, is if they're getting their VA claims for the veterans rated for the presumptive illnesses. I'm seeing a lot of that as they're saying that their claims for that were deferred. They may accept them for PTSD or anything else they can possibly try to connect. But as far as the presumptives, that we had a bill and law in place for the presumptives, chronic fatigue, irritable bowel, fibromyalgia, any of the symptoms of Gulf War illness, those are being deferred. So what's going on here? Healthcare. There has been no education of the doctors out there across the country that operate with the VA, much less civilian doctors. We've had veterans downloading, printing off, and taking in to their doctors to try to educate them because they haven't had any education. Now, the War-Related Illness Center, I hear, is going to have a seminar for CEU credits for medical providers out of the West Coast War-Related Illness Center. They are saying they're going to tape that and use that as a educational thing. And they've got some good researchers that will be presenting. So we'll have to wait and see. But there's been no education and training widespread to the VA physicians, healthcare providers. Even the VA regional offices haven't truly been educated. And then I went a step further when I got home and did some research on the VA, Office of Research and Development page. And you would think if they've been doing research on a given area that affects 1 in 4 or higher of Gulf War veterans that are ill, that they would be presenting this at their annual symposiums that they have for researchers. And lo and behold, I've found nothing since probably 04 forward, and they have annual meetings. I've gone through their agendas and their abstracts of, in case that they had poster sessions where they set up, they don't have enough time for everything, and they'll have a whole room set up with poster boards and review of research that's in process or done. And so I went through the abstract list for each of these meetings. Nothing. So if they're not communicating with people, and our Gulf War newsletter for Gulf War vets hasn't come out, and we have trouble advertising and getting those informed of the DOD-funded studies through the CDMRP, We have a lack of communication, a lack of commitment, the whole works. So that's kind of putting it right where it is right now for the Gulf War veterans that are suffering that Denny Williams was so involved in helping to write articles on. It's a sad state. It's a very sad state, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, from what you're the experience you've had, and this was the reason we wanted him on to much, because he is the king of the hill on this. I mean, the one that's done more for anybody than anybody, you know, journalist, one of the foremost journalists in our nation for many, many years, done more for vets than anyone I can know of.
Yeah, we had Norm Brewer. We had Denny Williams. We had David Parks of the Birmingham paper. The one that wrote with Gannett News was Brewer, and trying to remember the names. So, you know, we had somebody out of the Dallas papers that would report.
Yeah,
we had spotty reporting, but it was getting out there.
Yeah, and we had, you know, Bob Nichols out in California.
Right.
I mean, these are a handful, Seymour Hersh.
Right.
I mean, some years ago, if you remember, Cy Hirsch did all the investigative stuff, and he came out with that book, Against All Enemies.
Yes.
And that was specifically dealing with what today we know as Gulf War illness. And he not only talked to everybody involved, he talked to everybody in the command staff, he talked to the generals, he talked to the GAO, he talked to everybody involved. And in his book is where, you know, the whole thing was, it had been out before, the GAO knew it. Cy Hirsch was the first major journalist, besides Denny Williams and Dave Parks, that specifically said the order was given to destroy the chemical and biological logs. And again, in Cy Hirsch's book, he confirmed it. It was talked to the individual who destroyed him and how it all happened and the fact that the GAO knew it all along. So again, we have this incredible misinformation. And again, from our conversations, the experience we have, why we don't have it. Again, when we look at most journalists, I think what they're doing and what I ran into, the first thing they want is it a local story? They don't understand that the health effects from the war, whether they're doing from Vietnam and Korea and World War II all the way through up to the present time, come back to get the local people. Denise, you've done an incredible amount of work, haven't you, on the cross-contamination and working with the families and the military personnel at the bases where the contamination came back, didn't you?
Yeah, and it looks like the Camp Lejeune is they're going to provide them some medical care with the VA, and they've been battling for years from that contamination at that base. We have contaminated bases all over the place if you look at the environmental exposure list of toxic areas in the country. You'll see a lot of the bases.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. We've got right here in Rantoul, we've got Chanute Air Force Base, again, trichloroethylene. A lot of the, all of those volatile hydrocarbons we had, all of the stuff did chemical and biological. Same contamination that left from the Air Force Defense Preparedness, which is their NBC program that was at Chanute, also get down to Fort McClellan. And when they close that, well, as you know, that's still a grossly contaminated base. So, again, that's part of the work we had done, trying to get everything cleaned up and ensure the Department of Defense would clean up everything. You got right around those bases around Washington, D.C., Fort Detrick, Aberdeen, all of those incredible contaminations, Fort Myers. And, again, stuff that's getting out. But the information doesn't get out. And, again, we've got a handful of reporters that are getting the information out. Denise, I don't know, you and I have done so many radio interviews besides our, you know, doing this now ourselves. We've done documentaries not only within the nation but across the world trying to get the information out. But I think there's, and I guess one thing that I don't understand, this is really frightening for me, and again, you and I both had to go through this until we saw the light and had made the decision. The reluctance of the military personnel and the military families to even look at what has happened to them, to acknowledge what has happened to them, and to consciously recognize the causes. I mean, Denise, you've worked with medical for many, many years as a nurse. And again, going back to the Vietnam for me, and you and I have talked about this. Why do you think that the military personnel and the families are so reluctant to admit or acknowledge what's in front of their face and what has happened to them? Is it John Wayne? Is it Rambo? Is it red, white, and blue flag waving? What do you think it is?
Well, Doug, I think there are several things going on as far as the denial of responsibility and accountability. And I think, you know, we all know our nation's in debt, and we face that problem. And Paul Sullivan has documented that well. He worked within the VA, and his concern from the get-go was the number of people that would be compensated, much less the health care cost. I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes to reputations of the leaders of our country in several areas that may have had, you know, their reputations are at stake for, you know, they chased off the ghost of Vietnam by the Gulf War in 1991. That was what was promoted, and it continues to be promoted by the president that sent us to war. And Mr. Clinton tried to help, I think, to some degree, and the First Lady Clinton did. But how many of these congressmen or presidents were involved in, you know, go back to the Riegel report, of all the chemical weapons and precursors that were supplied to Iraq, Iran? And we know that when the bunkers were exploded, tapes were made, and it came from U.S. as along with a lot of other countries. So I think there's money involvement. I think there's reputation involvement. Now, the veterans, you know, you go forward and you do your duty, and you become little mushrooms, as I call it. You don't think it's going to affect you. You try to blot that off and go on with your life, and then we end up with someone like I talked to in the last week or two that he was trying to continue his life. He was still, you know, serving. And he all of a sudden had multiple pulmonary emboli and even a saddle pulmonary emboli, which blocks both passages to both lungs. It's a miracle he lived. He had no knowledge whatsoever of Gulf War illness. After he lived through that, he started looking around and getting educated. We have a lot of those out there that just are trying to continue their life the best they can and not acknowledge any problems until it hits them so hard that they have to look around. So even 21 years after the war, we are still having those people show up unexpectedly. But they're still out there, and we've had websites. We've, you know, tried our best to get the word out through Yahoo News groups for, you know, Gulf War vets. We've websites galore. You know, we have faxes going back and forth early on when that was the only way we could get info. When I've been up there, I mean, early on, the Riegel Report and Rockefeller Report got out because Desert Storm Mom of two Marines, myself, we would get these, and we'd hand type the stuff in to get it out to people. And I don't know what else can be done. We have worked hard to get the info out there on the websites, easily available if they know. If they get on Facebook and connect with any of the Gulf War vets, you know, we eventually find them and help them along and give them info. I think it's a, you know, military mindset that you could just keep going until you can't go any longer. And yet I track the obits and seeing the deaths, and I'm going, what's the cause of death? We don't know. I have to call the funeral homes and try to get info from them. The other thing that happened was they started sending out surveys, gosh, when was it, 94, National Survey, 93, 94. And I got one of the surveys, and I looked at it, and the majority of the stuff they asked about was stress-based. And I said, I'm not going to play this game. And so the RAC, there's a new national survey going out, and it involves Gulf War vets and Gulf War era vets, and they worked with that, Dr. Leah Steele, trying to get the questions in that we need input from the vet zone of symptoms, you know, diagnosed illnesses, how they're finding their illnesses, what's helping them treatment-wise, and they asked for these questions to be included in the survey. They refused to do it. They sent out the first 500. I don't know where the first 500 go to, But this is a every 10-year project, national survey, that they spend a lot of money on. And so Mark Brown, who left the VA, was replaced by two female doctors, and they were there at the VA RAC meeting. Well, they were like two deers caught in the headlights. And, of course, they took a lot of heat of, why are you not including the questions we need? Instead of just continuing page after page of questions on stress. There is no good answer. There is no good answer. I wonder if we were getting a complete death account, because we were told a long time ago, if you'll remember, Wild Bill is who we referred to, and he was with the Office of Special Investigation, I believe, if that's correct, Doug. And, you know, I was concerned if we're getting all the Social Security data on deaths. And he told us then that they had not done it for Agent Orange. He'd been involved in that. And he didn't expect them to do it on the Gulf War vets. And I am still not satisfied that we're getting a complete death count. And complete
well, I don't
data.
Think we're getting a complete information because, and I think I have to come back to it, it's this belief that the United States military does no wrong. This belief that, you know, the U.S. military, because we're so powerful, we can go to war today, there's no casualties. And it started off right off the bat, you know, from Desert Storm, same thing in Vietnam and Desert Storm, and that definitely happened in Iraqi Freedom and during Freedom. There's been no discussion about the true number of casualties. The only thing they've ever reported would be a handful of wounded in action.
They reported the killed in action.
Pardon?
Or the killed in action. And that's what they did with Agent Orange. They never had a complete count on Agent Orange or even the atomic vets. If you read data that I've seen, you know, the atomic vets that got covered were very small in number, maybe 5,000 to 6,000 to 7,000. And we know there was much more of them involved in the atomic testing and, you know, in Nevada and overseas and Bikini Islands, and much less the ones that were, you know, there in Japan after the atomic bomb. So, I don't know. I've excused the VA for being a broken-down battleship, but I get to the point I can't give them any excuses anymore when they refuse to work with scientists and doctors that are trying to do their best and get answers. And when we have the pushback from the VA, and it's very upsetting. We're taking very good care, I think, of our OEF, although we've got the burn pit veterans that, we don't have a full number on that, and they're still got bills on the floor right now on the House and Senate that need support. But, you know, those with visible injuries, we do tremendously well with. We could do just as well with the invisible injuries. The VA could be a leader. The DOD could be a leader like they were in starting helicopter transport. I mean, that's been a model for the civilian world. And I just feel that we could do so much better. It would have so many benefits, even to civilians that are exposed environmentally and get sick. Our country could be a leader here. And they're abandoning that leadership role for the invisible wounded. And we have a lot of talk about PTSD now. Homeless vets, we're taking care of the post 9/11 vets with caregiver bill. But how about the vets that have ALS that we now have covered? Are they getting the benefits of the caregiver bill? No, unless they were post 9/11. The MS veterans, the ones that are coming down with brain cancers, with Gulf War illness, you know, we've neglected a whole group of veterans that are very deserving, serve their country. And, you know, I've met Shinseki. I've met the benefits, you know, head of benefits. And, you know, I've talked to him blue in the face. I've testified. I've written articles. You know, and veterans are standing ready. Let us help. There is a bill coming up, Doug, that I wanted to mention that may be a help. And interesting is Congressman Kaufman, who served in the Gulf War and in the war since. and he's from Colorado. There's a bill, he hasn't dropped it yet, but that would require veterans to have the priority at the VA to become employed. Now, if we had more veterans employed and in the raiders' jobs, there'd be more understanding of what these vets are going through, and maybe the claims would get fixed.
You know, again, but it comes to a simple thing. And when I talk to reporters, whether the reporters right here in our area, and they say, well, I can't do the story. I said, it's huge. We need to discuss it again. Well, where's the direct connection to us? And I go, it's not just a direct connection in our community, because we've got hundreds and hundreds of people sick right here, can't get proper care. But it goes far beyond. But again, it comes back to that. I think it's a fundamental thing. Number one, and this is Denny. Denny, are you here by chance yet?
I've sent him my email, so.
Okay. You know, the sad thing about this thing is the reporter and the newspaper have to make money, okay? They have to sell advertising. And what I've been told by journalists that really care, and we've had this discussion many, many times, is the fact that if they put forth exactly what has transpired, how we got into these wars, what the weapon systems are that we use, what the consequences of the weapon systems are, what the consequences are of the destruction of the areas we went into, and what all are the disease non-battle injuries, in addition to wounded in action, in addition to killed in action, and then discuss the hundreds and hundreds and thousands that died from their disease and non-battle injuries once they returned to the States or died in Germany. That myth, that whole thing that surrounds the U.S. military and what we are doing would disappear. I mean, I really, and I think that's my own thing. I mean, both you and I have talked about it. It's a struggle you and I have both made and continue to make, because we're wishing and hoping that our commanders would step up. We're wishing and hoping that the Secretary Shinseki will step up. We expected General Pete to step up. I mean, I remember you and I having a direct conversation with Tony.
Right.
How many VA secretaries ago was that now?
I know. And, you know, the thing is it's not just print media. It's radio.
Not at all.
It's radio. It's TV. Gary Knowles has been fantastic for us on the documentaries, but I've yet to see it show up on the public TV of his documentaries on Gulf War. His documentaries on health and alternative health shows up. And,
well, they,
you know,
should be taking that documentary and putting it together, one of the major networks, again, cable or preferably either one or both, and, you know, standard broadcast or cable, and get this out to everybody and do it like a whole thing, like a football or basketball game. We're getting the information out. This is what's happening. This
and,
is what's thoroughly documented.
We've had CNN, and then we lost them, because if they got something on the air, what happened, Doug? You know those producers. You talk to them.
Yeah, I mean, he was fired, and the same thing with the BBC. We had, I mean, you and I were at the, remember you and I were at the meeting with the research, President of Special Oversight Board, when they stated they were going to get rid of Dan Rather. I mean, Dan Rather had done the work. We had worked with Dan Rather. We got the information on CBS Evening News. That was, as you know, for me, that was an incredible story and everything else. My students were astonished when the truck showed up, and we're doing it for real.
We had Discovery Channel, and it only got shown one time.
Yeah, we did all the stuff with the RNA, DNA, and modifications on Discovery.
The producer got fired, I understand. It seems like every time we got somebody doing a story, they got fired. We have Sanjay Gupta, who went overseas and was embedded with the troops, did surgery, neurosurgery. He hasn't talked about it. And he's with CNN, the outstanding doctor on the network, you know, on CNN. And it's neurological. You would think that we could get him involved. We had the New York Times that got an award. I'm trying to remember that writer's name. But, you know, part of that was, okay, we're giving you an award now, go quiet. You know, what can they do? They could go out when there's obits in their papers that show Gulf War vets are dying. Go out, interview the families, find the other vets that are going to the for the memorial or funeral service and talk to them. You know, this is a local story. It is a state story. And like Vic Sylvester and I years ago, We did a cost figure of if you do not compensate the vets, there is no impact to the economy, to the positive of if you pay them their compensation, they're going to be able to survive input to you know, buying groceries, you know, whatever. And on the other hand, you don't do anything for them. That's a negative. We figured that up, that cost potential, you know, being based on like a 50% compensation and how many it might be per state. I mean, that's a definite input to the economy of the state. And, you know, so, you know, if you ignore them and they're just dying at home, which a lot of the obits, you know, died at home. Don't know why.
Yeah, but I think what it comes down to is the flag waving, okay? The military is always right. There are no casualties in the military. The weapon systems we are don't leave health and environmental effects. And we're actually talking about putting the truth out there. I mean, depleted uranium. As you know, incredible problems. You've seen the directives I was given when I was given the order by Schwarzkopf to personally clean this mess up. At the same time, I was given an order by General Schwarzkopf to clean this up by personal, by name order, signed by his chief of staff. At the same time, the head guy from the Defense Nuclear Agency gave me a memo that passed on down saying serious health effects, serious political consequences, and everything. We need to clean it up. And then at the same time, and you've seen this, you've got in your hand Denise the Los Alamos memo that said to lie, cheat, and steal, and avoid all liability, sustain the use of uranium munitions without any accountability for the health and environmental effects.
And let me talk about news coverage. This past week, we had an elderly lady that serves on the bus as a bus monitor for school kids. And that took over in the media. They put up a fundraiser for her, and she got, I think it's upwards of $650,000 now. Take a vacation.
A half a million.
Yeah, it's over that. It's $650,000 or whatever. And yet I went through that website where the fundraising is. There's vets that need dental help. I mean, there's a handful. Let's say there's 5 or 10 that I found needing dental help. And we all know you've had dental problems. I've had dental problems. And unless you're 100%, you can't get your dental needs met at the VA. And much less the vision problems. And there was a couple with dental problems asking for help. There was somebody asking for help that should be provided by the VA if they had their claim through, you know, a wheelchair, building a ramp. I mean, it's ridiculous that, you know, we can go and support a poor lady, and it was wrong that she got bullied by the kids. On the other hand, I want to know what she was doing to control them.
I thought she was supposed to be controlling the kids on a bus.
Yeah, but, you know, it can be hard, but, you know, all this outflow of attention on the media, on every channel, and, you know, $650,000 raised for her, and I go and check the website that's raising the money, and I'm going, here are vets. You know, put in veterans into their search, and you'll come up with their stories, and, you know, they're not getting any attention at all. And I'm going, what is it with America that doesn't respond? They respond to the need of the OIF vets and rebuilding homes for them, giving them new homes, fully equipped if they're visibly damaged. Again, visible damage. And, you know, Doug, you and I have traveled. We've done things. It gets very hard on our bodies to keep going. And we do it because so many of the vets financially cannot get up to Boston, cannot speak forward. And that's the other thing. Why aren't those being webinars for the ability to share the information coming from that group to every VA doctor, every VA researcher? Every researcher in the nation could tune in. And they're not. We had a call-in line. The first day it was so bad, they couldn't hear. We were getting notified, we can't hear, and we were going in trying to get them to fix the problem. Second day was better, much better. And we've had that occur throughout our course of having our meetings, and this should be transparency in the government. And it's, you know, I get to the point of we've been going for 21 years, Doug, and American public is being kept out of the information loop. Doctors are, researchers. And it seems like a, I don't like to go conspiracy on anybody, but it sure seems to be a shutdown of coverage. And I was told down in Colorado Springs, you know, we'll have you on this radio program, whatever, but if it risks us having access to the base and being able to get information from them, we aren't going to be able to do it anymore.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, what bothers me, we have all of the veterans organizations, American Legion, the AMBITS, the DAV, the VFW should be helping also. But what I have found, and when I go to their websites, I don't see any information about the exposures. I don't see any information about the medical examinations that be done. I don't see any information about what are the consequences of these use of these different weapon systems. I don't see any information.
Or even a personal story from a vet and what they've gone through to get their claim, if they've gotten it, and much less the care. They don't want to put any negative stories out.
Yeah,
they want all the positive, feel-good history, feel-good, you know, and I just feel like we as a nation need to face up to this and deal with it. Where's the leadership in our country? And as I stood up on my public comment, you know, I was very upset seeing what I was seeing happening to the VA RAC that we've fought so hard for, being just shut down by the VA itself, was to tell them that, hey, it feels like we've been placed in the expectant category of triage. And if people don't know that, in triage and national emergency, hurricane, mass trauma, be it at war or peacetime, there's categories that you place people in. The immediate, which is life-threatening, loss of limb. The delayed, which are they're walking around, they're doing okay, we need to get to them after the immediate. And it goes all the way to the expectant, which is we don't have the resources to deal with them right now. And, you know, they're not going to make it. So we place them in the expectant category. We group them together. We put one unessential medical person there to give them comfort, whatever we can do.
Well, you know, during Desert Storm, if you remember, and you've seen the photos and video of the main facilities as we designed to put those up, the expectants are those in that category. We didn't even waste any, I mean, the whole intent was not to waste resources on them.
Right.
I mean, that's what happened at the World Trade Center with Willie Rodriguez and the police and fire. They didn't waste their resources trying to get somebody that was unable to run down the stairs themselves. They didn't expect the buildings to come down, but we've had this conversation many, many times with the police and the fire and Willie, is they made the conscious choice to do the proper thing on reverse triage, had no concept that it was all going to come down in 45 minutes. And so they did the triage, what you have to do in a mass CAL incident. You take care of those that you can take care of and use the most of your resources, and don't waste your resources on those that you can't care for.
But the 9/11 people have had continuing studies on them. They have had a lot given to the 9/11 victims and exposure victims in New York. We haven't had the same for Gulf War veterans or those ill with environmental damage. And that's important to point out to the world that may be listening to this radio program in the future on archives or whatever, is that we have abandoned at least 250,000 Gulf War vets that served in the Gulf. And when you talk about not having press coverage, when I was at one of the RAC meetings and we had the Grivas reports that were reviewed each time, I had the old one and I asked for the new one that they hadn't emailed out yet, and I took it from one of the committee members, and I immediately looked at the death rate. And it was a three-month period. There was 1,000 deaths in 3 months. And no news media picked that up and said, hey, what's going on here? This is a real story. And, you know, these are our young people. Our youngest now, if they were 18, 19, 21 years, we're looking at 40-year-olds. We could still make a difference for them.
Yeah, we can. I mean, the Griffiths report, we followed those for many years. And I mean, in 2008, the Griffiths report, there were over 280,000 Desert Storm vets at that time that had already gone to the VA for medical care. And then when they were coming out with this latest, you know, plan for the research, VA research on Desert Storm, the report was released a couple months ago. If you remember, General Shinseki himself personally had knowledge over 300,000 had come to him for care.
Right.
But somehow in the media and the press, all these numbers disappear. Somehow in the media and the press.
Well, they don't put in relationship that our deployed number on that first Gulf War was somewhere over 690,000.
Correct.
Now, we've quoted the number 1 in 4 for Gulf War illness research in the RAG. That's tremendous, but it has climbed. And I saw the quote in one of VA, you know, type covered thing that said 300,000. I'm going, do people get it? Do they look at 690,000 versus 300,000?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to another end of another evening. A lot of information here we discussed. Denise, thank you for joining us. We'll have to connect and get our guests back at another time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, we got to take care of our vets. We need help. We need information out, and take care of us. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless America. Thank you, Denise.